The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
You basically lost two All-Ireland down in one season. It's only 9 months since we lost the last one.
Only Mayo could lose two All-Ireland in one season.
Yeah, that's going to be cool, isn't it?
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Just delve straight into the Champions League. On the whole, before we get into any of the specifics, a good start over the last couple of days, a welcome return of the best quality football that we see, really ever, is it?
Let's park the best quality of football as well and just say that, yeah, I did enjoy the last two nights' football. Yeah, came back, it was more crash, bang, wallop the last two nights. I was working on the Manchester United game. That was interesting for a few different reasons. Then, obviously, Liverpool last night, yeah, was really enjoyable. It was... Yeah, it's been a while now since I sat in front of the telly. I haven't left the telly almost during the game. It was one of those games last night against Milan. Just atmosphere inside the stadium was just like, oof. Just coming out of TV, dripping out of TV, wasn't it?
We missed that, it turns out. So when football came back after the first lockdown, we were very grateful to have anything. But it wasn't really football, was it?
Yeah, yeah, and even those kind of, yeah, we got 400 people in the main stands, just even just to have a few people, wasn't quite buying into that one either, to be honest with you. You know, even visually looking at those stadiums, even kind of quarter, half full for me, it just, you know, not really. But yeah, that last night was, that was pretty special last night at Anfield.
Who was Jordan Henderson making the sounds to? Was it like... I wasn't in the team at the weekend, and you took a little bit of...
You didn't think I was worth 280 grand? You only thought I was worth 260? Yeah, really? Yeah, really?
That's what it was, the contract.
I don't know.
Because I was wondering, it was like, it took them a while, they got there eventually in the end, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It was an obvious... Well, not an obvious one, actually. Spoke to a couple of Liverpool supporters. What Liverpool do? Bloody ass Jordan Henderson, but... I could understand maybe Liverpool's reluctance to commit. I don't know how long the contract was in the end. It's obviously one of the bounds of contention was a 3 years, Jared. I don't know. Obviously, Henderson's looking for as long a contract as he wants, and there's big money at play there. But Jordan Henderson would be the first high profile player at his age at a big club who, you know, signed a 3-4 year, was given a 3-4 year contract, and within 12 to 18 months had kind of dropped off a cliff, but in terms of performance, you know, serious dip, deterioration in terms of, you know, their physical condition, etc., and their kind of impact in the squad. So I understood Liverpool's reluctance to commit to that length of a contract on those terms.
His contract will now expire on June 30th, 2025. So that's 4 seasons, 4 years from now, but it might have only added on an extra 1 year as opposed to being added on an extra two, but it's plenty.
Oh, it's plenty for him, and yeah, what you have now is you have a happy camper around the change room. Although he didn't look particularly happy, like you say, after he hit that goal last night. It was a sweet strike, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's also like, so obviously the injury happens at the weekend, and they're like, yeah, we'll put our most experienced player, our captain, back in the team. It's the squad depth is an issue at Liverpool, and it will become an issue over the course of the rest of the season if they continue to have significant long term injuries. But at the moment, they can deal with it.
Yeah, and that was Liverpool for me last night. In terms, it was no coincidence the way Liverpool started the game. You know, we all know kind of high energy, high intensity. You know, high press, swarming around people, that high defensive line. But that can only be effective if you get the right kind of personnel on the pitch. And this is the interesting debate about Liverpool the last year or so in terms of different players who've come into the team, particularly in that central midfield area. But I don't think it was any surprise. I think Klopp was looking to really come out of blocks last night and really impose himself on Milan, actually overrun them, kind of suffocate them. So it was no surprise Thiago was parked on the bench last night and Keita came into the team, because Liverpool have been at their best. That central midfield for me, obviously the front three to an extent, but that central midfield is key in terms of their energy, their kind of physicality, their kind of high intensity, how they almost maul opponents. That's how they won their first league title. And we saw that last night in the presence of Henderson, Fabinho and Keita. Keita's had a difficult time, but he's got legs. You know, he's physical, he's kind of aggressive. Didn't have a great game last night, but he kind of contributed. So that was more the Liverpool blueprint, DNA, whatever you want to call it, that's been successful for them over the past couple of years. Yeah, let's take last year out of the equation to a small extent. We know the circumstances there, but so that's Liverpool I'd like to see.
Were you surprised to see Origi start? Because he doesn't really start these big games.
Yeah, you're right. A little bit surprised. But again, what I'd say is legs can get around the pitch, can start that press, can go and engage opposition, centre-halves, and can do it continually over the course of 90 minutes, you know what I mean? So he wasn't bringing in a player who was going to weaken. For me, what drove that team sheet last night was how Liverpool out possession. We need to be perfect out possession in terms of how we hunt this team down. These are good footballing side, Milan. Got some very talented individual players, like to play the game at kind of their pace. So Liverpool have to kind of counteract that, and they have the team to do it in terms of that kind of tenacity that we're talking about, that kind of high energy. And I think Origi kind of provided that, albeit a little bit higher up the pitch.
Yeah. So it's clear that they're trying to manage the minutes of the players. There's no Virgil last night. And it's a similar number of changes and a similar approach to the game that Manchester United took. But there's a difference in the quality of the teams at the moment. Maybe not in the quality of the personnel, but there's certainly a difference in terms of the team understanding what they're trying to do, what their identity is.
Yeah, but Klopp made the changes last night, but the balance of the team for me wasn't affected. Van Dijk coming out, Gomez coming in, fundamentally nothing changes. Obviously, yeah, in terms of the qualities of Van Dijk, I understand that, but in terms of really the balance of the team, the midfield three for me was strengthened actually by Henderson coming into the Van der Beek came into the Manchester United team the other night. Pogba got shifted out onto the left wing, playing left of a three. So the balance, that shift shifts the whole balance of the Manchester United. It's a skew now, where the changes Liverpool made last night, that wasn't the case. Even Origi going centrally and Jota coming onto the left hand side, fundamentally the balance of the team didn't change. And like I said, in the engine room, in that central area of the pitch, Liverpool were strengthened for me. You mentioned about strength and depth, maybe to an extent. I mean, I'm a big fan of Curtis Jones, I've got to be honest with you. The last year or so, I thought there was a time last year he was actually going to break through and hold down a place in that central midfield. I think potentially he could be the best Liverpool all-round central midfield the next 2 to 3 years. He's developing the plays. He's got a bit of everything physically. He's more mature now. I think the defensive side to the game is improving, which it has to do because of the things that we've been talking about, what you have to do in that central midfield area for Liverpool. And he's a very technical player, and he's got legs, and he's got an end product in terms of goals. So when we talk about those other Liverpool central midfield players, whether it's Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago's kind of ball playing, his technical ability, but kind of no legs, can't trust him defensively. But Curtis Jones for me is potentially the one, I think, who can actually step in to that Liverpool midfield. Certainly over, even this year I'm looking at, even last night when he came on, I was impressed with him. You know, real confidence when he came out on the pitch, going and getting on the ball. He's got legs he can get around the pitch. I think he's a real talent and really interesting to see. I'll be interested to see how Klopp thinks about what he really thinks about him. I know he'll come out publicly and say, oh yeah, great talent, we love him here, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day,
how big the games are going to be that he picks him.
Yeah, yeah, minutes on the pitch. Ultimately, it's all about minutes. You can talk about how much I trust me player. Yeah, I love him. Oh yeah, we're so lucky to have him. But, you know, when the big games
might be available for
along,
15 to 20 million.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I'm a big fan. So you're talking about strength and depth. For me, he's the one. Harvey obviously showed up well early in the season. But Jones is the one for me in that kind of central midfield area who could really break through. I know a lot of people talk about Thiago, but for me it's Jones is the one for me who can actually elevate Liverpool potentially.
So in theory they can actually take injuries at this point to almost anybody with the exception of Salah. Is that kind of what we feel about Liverpool?
It depends what you mean they can't take an injury to Salah.
Well
they miss him obviously in terms of his
none
his
of the
goals,
replacements they have for
that's
him
what you're talking about.
Like take Salah out of the team and they're definitely a significantly weakened side. Most of the great sides.
That's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Well, he's reached that level now where if he's not on the team sheet, the opposition goes, we have a chance, but if he isn't the team sheet, you're very concerned about it. I suppose what I'm saying is the squad is big enough to deal with almost any injuries.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that's the beauty of Jota in particular coming in. He's very versatile. Jota can operate anywhere across the front three and even in behind. So you talk about Salah coming out of the team and yeah, absolutely, in terms of his numbers speak for themselves, but I don't think it's a case, well, who have we got to play right side of a three? I mean, Jota predominantly just slides over there, like, you know what I mean? I don't think You know, don't give your chin to be on the floor. As a Liverpool supporter, Diego Jota was popping up right side of it, three, Mane and potentially kind of Firmino as well. So, yeah, you can always make that. What if they lose? Yeah, what if they lose Van Dijk again? Yeah, what if they lose Henderson for a long period of time?
If they lose Van Dijk again, have they got enough now that Matip and Gomez are back and they've signed Konate and like
they've got enough to challenge. If you ask me, they've got enough to challenge
to
for the title.
Yeah,
like, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the thing, because like obviously last year they didn't have enough. The squad wasn't deep enough.
Well, no, but they had those key instrumental figures missing for a long period. Van Dijk in particular was absolutely huge, and obviously some significant injuries. Apart from that, that was pretty exceptional. Very difficult to plan over the course of a season for losing key players for such a long period of time. But I like to look at the squad. I like to look at the squad. Now it hasn't been a huge amount of investment. Canate is a good player, actually. I like him. Haven't seen a lot of him yet, but they have been strengthened there. So no, I wouldn't be overly critical. I know a few Liverpool supporters, a little bit weak here and there. I don't see any obvious weaknesses in terms of the strength of the squad, and everybody, as key players, as with any team, keep fit for the majority of the season, key parts of the season. I think they'll be fine, and I expect them to be challenging.
The third generation of Maldini's obviously coming on last night with about 10 minutes left to go. If something's going to make you feel old, I presume that was it, was it?
I know, centre forward, wasn't he? I've seen a little bit of him play, actually, to be honest with you. You can see the similarities there, couldn't you? Must be a killer for the old man. First touch actually tried a little something, it didn't come off. It's got to be one of them. You're grimacing a little bit of the old man in the stadium. But
so Liverpool are in rude health. They're able to make changes. They still win, even though they're up against a side who give them their fill of it in Europe. They've got to be pretty happy with life at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. In comparison, where they were, roller coaster for season last year. Yeah, absolutely.
What about City last night? So you score 6 at home in the Champions League. The music is great. Your new star player is coming off buzzing afterwards, saying he can take on anybody one-on-one in the world. And you still concede 3. What? How do they feel about this? Do they feel great about life?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, 6 goals shouldn't be. I don't think we should be that surprised. Not as strong a Leipzig side as has been around previously, but that's what they're capable of. That's the quality which they have high up the pitch. These are the type of combinations that they can put on the pitch. That kind of front five you'd kind of compare, I suppose, to Liverpool last night. This is what I'm talking about, Liverpool DNA last night. What that suits Liverpool best is when they're at their very best. But you look at the Manchester City front five, and in particular I'd compare the two Manchester City number eights to the two Liverpool number eights. Liverpool played with Henderson and Keita in those two advanced number eight positions. Manchester City put De Bruyne and was it Bernardo Silva, usually Gundogan, in those, different types, different beasts, so that kind of dictates in terms of how you play your football. Manchester City play a different brand of football at times to Liverpool. There's significant differences there. Both can be equally effective, as we've seen. They both won 2 league titles, and that's the kind of comparison. That's the real interest for me. That kind of style of football suits City in terms of the individual qualities they have. For me, what we saw in Liverpool last night, that's the type of football Liverpool need to play and stick to that, and that's what really gets under Manchester City's skin. But getting back to your original point, Manchester City can be equally effective playing their style of football, and Grealish for me is it's no surprise. Like, a little bit surprised, maybe not a little bit surprised, Manchester City jumped, just because that type of player, obviously they haven't numbered him in their squad. I was very surprised. Maybe I think any of the top teams, I was surprised, weren't tripping over themselves to get Grealish into the squad. You've mentioned maybe Liverpool. I mean, he's the type of player for me, you've got to jump, you've got to grab him.
Yeah.
Normally you'd say, well, how does he fit in our style of play? Does he complement? And I understand that's generally the case 95% of the time when you're looking to bring in a player, even a high profile player. But Grealish is one for me that you've got to get him. You've got to get him in the door, and then you decide where you're going to play him. I think he's that good.
Yeah. So is he better than Jadon Sancho? Is he more suited?
I think he's a different type of player. I think he's the best around. He's better than Raheem Sterling for me, I'll tell you that. That's why he's playing when push comes to shove, I think he'd play. If he plays in those wide areas for Manchester City, I think he has. He'll play left of a three, and he'll probably play ahead of Raheem Sterling, just because he's a different type of player. He's a highly technical player. You can trust him with the ball. Decision making is kind of intelligence. I think there's differences there with Sterling, more kind of a more explosive, kind of more blinkered in his approach. Sterling doesn't quite see pictures like Grealish does. And then of course there's that versatility. I'm still looking forward to seeing him play in those central midfield positions, those two number eights we're talking about. Still think potentially he could play there as long as he picks up a bit of slack defensively. He'd
definitely play there. I've no doubts about that. Having watched him for Villa, like he would end up in those positions a lot in the game.
Yeah, but he only played there as a 10 for Villa by Dominic Gier, you know. And that,
when they're out of possession though, he ended up kind of having to defend a good bit too. Like, it wasn't like there was no responsibility, and even in the Championship as well. Like, it's the fact that he's played so many games and had to be responsible in all of them that the whole team was always looking to him to perform, and the vast majority of times he did do it. I think that we underestimate the value of that sometimes.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that. I think he was a little bit loose. I think he was a bit ill-disciplined in his positional sense at Manchester City, Aston Villa, but there's reasons for that, like you were saying. Huge amount of responsibility on him, you know, not receiving enough of the ball, having to drift into areas of the pitch.
Yeah, people would have said that with Gerrard at times, or even
I understand
when he's playing for England.
Yeah, you're absolutely. So now he's looking around the pitch and he knows, even if he's playing left side of three, trust other people to get on the ball and find them in the areas where he can hurt the opposition.
He's never played with anybody as good as De Bruyne or Phil Foden or any of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that'll elevate his game even more for me, and it'll get him into areas of the pitch where he can better influence the game, you know, that kind of tour, that, you know, last tour to the pitch, because I think his numbers have to improve in terms of his goals for a player of his quality. We saw an indication of it last night. The goal that he scored last night was great, but that's where he needs to be more often, picking the ball up 5 yards outside the penalty box 1v1 and end product. I think that's where he can improve as well, but I think he will, because he'll find himself in those situations more and more at Manchester City.
So no concern for you that they conceded 3 last night in the Champions League, that there's a template there for other teams watching to go, or is that specifically because they're playing against a side who they know they're going to overwhelm over the course of the 90 minutes?
No, there's always that small concern with Manchester City. I think the concern going forward is in that a lot of talk about Manchester United and that kind of holding midfield position, that kind of defensive linchpin, the struggles they have. I'm not exactly sure of Manchester City either in that area of the pitch. Fernandinho's got an extra year, I think, but kind of approaching the twilight of his career, he's been the best there's been. I think he's still their best option that area of the pitch. I'm not a huge fan of Rodri, I've got to be honest with you. I think he's a very good ball playing midfield player, kind of quite technical, but I'm not blown over by him again in terms of the defensive qualities he has, and I think that's potentially an issue for Manchester City. They didn't play with one actually in the final against Chelsea and suffered, but even with Rodri in there, for me, he doesn't nail down that central area of the pitch when they haven't got the ball. Don't think he's the most athletic. I don't think look at him sometimes, he doesn't strike me as one who really enjoys the defensive side of the game, which Fernandinho does, and the very best in that position actually do. They love it. Love being in there, breaking up attacks, making tackles, you know, seeing danger and giving that kind of screen in front. So I think that is one of the reasons, to me, if you're going to ask me the question, are 3 goals, should we be concerned? I think we should always be concerned to a certain extent, Manchester City, in terms of their defensive setup. I think it's improved. I think their kind of press has improved last year. They went away from that somewhat, came very passive out possession of the ball, and I think they suffered because of it. They got back to that last season. But I still think that kind of, like I said, that central area of the pitch, somebody with that real kind of defensive mindset, I think it was being greedy. I think maybe they're just slightly short in that area of the pitch. It might be a small gripe, to be honest, but like you're saying,
well, it's
the very highest level when it really matters, when it counts.
Champions League final against a good manager who understands what they're trying to do. You know, you can see how that might become an issue. The other big result last night, obviously, was the 1-1 draw for Paris Saint-Germain and Bruges. So that one finished 1-1, and we got to see Mbappe, Neymar and Messi together. And it's going to take time, naturally, or is this actually, you know, so put yourself back, right, back in the changing room, and you're the centre back, and that's your front three. And let's face it, they're not the hardest working front three when it comes to pressing and defending and getting back. How do you feel?
Well, it's gonna be an issue. I think Pochettino was quoted as saying, look, we're not quite a team. Yeah, and I'm sure that's one of the things that he's alluding to, because when you break that down, kind of what is a team? Well, to some extent, it's kind of your attitude and your application on the pitch, taking personal responsibility for your role in the team. So I think that's what's being kind of part of a team. And as you've suggested there, you know, our possession, the work rate of those three players in particular is going to come under scrutiny. And it's going to be a factor. If they're going to be successful, forget about the domestic league, like, but saying if they're going to be successful in European competition, that's the Champions League, and go and win it. That's the intention of bringing these players in. That's going to be a factor. These players are going to have to dig in. But, you know, Messi hasn't been digging in for Barcelona in that respect for the past couple of years. It just hasn't been expected of him. Like, I'm not sure physically if he can play at that level out of possession anymore. Neymar, feast or famine in that respect as well. So, yeah, I think it is an issue. And it is an issue for Pochettino, how he manages that. And if he can actually go through well and draw that out of Messi in particular, because it is going to hurt them. Now, you talk about the front three, that team sheet last night. Oh, you look at that front three. Well, did you look at the midfield three? Andres Herrera, Paredes. Can't remember, I've had a blank to Tordun in there.
Wijnaldum.
Yeah, Wijnaldum. I mean, that's a key area of the pitch. You know, we're talking about Liverpool last night, how good they were in the engine room.
Yeah, Wijnaldum, Manchester Paredes, City. And Herrera started it, and Wijnaldum and Paredes come off. Paredes comes off at half time for Danilo Pereira. Ronaldo comes off at half time for Julian Draxler. And then Mbappe comes off after 51 minutes for Icardi.
Yeah, but it's not going to blow you away. That central midfield axis for me, no matter whoever three they put in there, I think there's question marks over that. I'll be looking at that midfield three saying, really, is that good enough in terms of what you look at what's around? Their counterparts are going to be competing for the Champions League. So that'd be the biggest concern for me. I wouldn't get blown away from a couple of those other signs as well. Sergio Ramos, for me, does nothing for that team coming in. I'd be surprised if he plays, to be honest, which is better. There's better defenders at the club.
Well, Ramos isn't actually fit, I think, until October or November.
Yeah, so I suppose that's my point. So you look at those big, massive free transfers coming in. Hakimi, to be fair, like fine player. He'll improvement in that area of the pitch. But I think a number of those signs for me, I'd be scratching my head in terms of, oh, yeah, wow, bang. You look at the name and you think, oh, this is pretty amazing what's happening at PSG. But realistically for me, I think it's an argument for saying I don't think they've been particularly strengthened with the acquisition of a couple of these players.
Kehler playing in goals as well, so Donnarumma on the bench. So as a centre-back, what do you think it would be like to play in that team at the moment?
As a centre-half, I'd be more concerned with that midfield three in front of me, to be honest with you, rather than the front three. I think players understand. I mean, they're not fools, and they'll realise Lionel Messi comes in, maybe to a smaller extent, the same with Cristiano Ronaldo at Manchester United. That was a conversation after the game the other night. You know, feast or famine, the weekend, how well he played, well, the goals that he scored at the weekend, and in different circumstances against young boys, he showed his limitations, which he has now at the stage of a career that he's at, in terms of his energy levels, what he can do for the team in that situation. A man down when you're expected to show a lot of energy, kind of run the channels and, you know, give that type of performance as a lone striker, he's not able to do that. But I think, you know, the Manchester United players and manager probably realised that when he came in. The same is true of Messi. I think it's always the case, as long as you really impact the game in other areas, you have to be impacting the game in other areas. Ronaldo has done that predominantly since he's been at the club. The goals he scored, albeit in a short period, and Messi's going to have to do that as well. As long as his numbers are up there in terms of goals and assists, and players look at him and think this lad could be the difference in those big games that you're talking about, Jared, coming up, the lads look at him and say, in any given day, this lad can just turn the game on its head and take us where we want to go in terms of Champions League finals. I think they'll suck it up, even if that means they've got to dig in and, you know.
Okay, so everybody's realistic about the fact that this increases my workload, but it might also increase
absolutely, yeah. I think that's always been the case in the game. But of course, you know, when that's not the case and maybe they're not impacting the game and the attitude's a little bit and not really committing themselves to the cause, not being that type of team player that we're talking about, I think that can grade a little bit, and that's when the issues start within the dressing room, and that's when that can be very difficult to manage even for a top manager.
All right, we'll talk about the Manchester United midfield situation in just a moment, but I just want to tell everybody that OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors. And the number to get involved in this morning, 087-9180-180, or you can just leave a comment in the YouTube stream if you're watching on YouTube. Of course, you can tweet us at OffTheBallAM. Here's what's coming up between now and 10 o'clock for you, talking about the Champions League, obviously. With Kenny, we've got the sports pages and an update on the Connacht Women's Rugby training ground fiasco situation from Will at about 8:05. Joe McMahon is going to talk to us from the Tyrone backroom team at 8:20. Sports news at 8:40. Harry Pryor at 8:50 was at the Liverpool game last night. Our OTB TV picks with Sue, final one for the foreseeable future, and then Luke Jensen on Emma Raducanu at 9:30 this morning. So if Cristiano Ronaldo at this stage of his career is not the out and out single striker that you want when you're down to 10 men, what about the midfielders of Fernandes and Pogba? They should have the energy levels to be able to manage a game. They certainly have the experience to manage a game when you're down to 10 men, and yet it didn't quite look like they were capable of doing it. The comparison that everybody's making is Chelsea go down to 10 men against Liverpool. Okay, so they gave up some chances, but they managed the game very professionally, like they'd been drilled to do it, like they knew what their jobs were and they understood what they were. That wasn't apparent after the Young Boys game.
Yeah. No, I didn't. I maybe wouldn't go so far as say I was scratching my head in terms of the changes that were made once Wan-Bissaka was sent off. I thought the first one was a substitute. The first big challenge for the manager, I can understand it because it happens quickly, the sending off. You're not expecting it. He's walking off the pitch and suddenly, what do you do? You've got to get it right back on the pitch. That's the first thing you got to do. So Dallow's got to come on the pitch. So you're going to sacrifice. So that's your first big decision. And it's important because you get that wrong, you can't rectify it. And there's still the majority of the game to go. I was surprised he took Sancho off, I've got to be honest with you, because the first thing primarily when you go down to 10 men, I think for me in your head, you're thinking, right, I need to keep legs on the pitch. You know, you're thinking your defensive mentality or your defensive setup from that point on to a point, don't get me wrong, but you're also thinking legs. I'm one man down, everybody's got to up increase their workload now in terms of getting around the pitch, etc. And that's not just our possession, Jerry, in terms of having to run around a bit more, closing people down and a bit more defensive responsibility, but you've also got to be thinking about offering an attacking threat as well. And to do that, when you're playing with a man down, you're going to be operating from a reasonably low defensive block, being a man down. So you're going to be breaking out from deep defensive positions. And to do that effectively, you need pace. You need now pace in the team as well to complement that bit of defensive solidity to get yourself up the pitch.
Yeah.
And just to give you a respite, not necessarily go and score goals, although that's what you're looking to do potentially on the counter-attack, but just to take the team up the pitch and get a bit of respite. So I was surprised Sancho wasn't having particularly the greatest of games, but he can give you that. He's got good legs, Sancho's a young lad, we know that. So that was the first one for me.
Could he not have gone to wing-backs? Was it not a fairly obvious, like, you kind of have Fred drop into a central defensive role and then Sancho plays as a right wing-back and Nick Shaw plays as a left wing-back, and like, you don't trust Sancho at this stage of his career? You haven't seen enough of him? What's the...
Well, I don't know. Well, I think for me, what's looming and what's obviously, which I think it is topic at the moment in terms of his reluctance to take, or has he got the bravery or the kahunas, I think as you'd probably say, to make the big decision, maybe take Ronaldo off at that stage, or even Fernandes. Now Fernandes isn't one you carry out possession, he's high energy and he does look to go and press, and but for me he's like, he hasn't got clear pictures in his head sometimes. When he goes to press, he goes alone, he gets passed around very easily, he kind of wastes his energy a lot of the time, Bruno. So he's kind of willing, but he's not quite smart at times in terms of how he and when he goes to press. So yeah, in terms of the change of shape, he made a substitution at half time for this. So he gets to half time, Jed. He's made that one substitution, fair enough. He's got Dallow on the team. So he gets to half time. Now he's had the 10 minutes before half time and the whole of the half time, have conversations with his coaches and get clear pictures in his head, right? How are we going to go about this second half? So for me, again, that was the opportunity, right? Now we get this defensive setup absolutely spot on. Now I couldn't say the way he set up the team. He went to a back five, he went to a narrow midfield three with Fred. Bruno to her right and Pogba to the left of him in kind of narrow defensive shield, and Ronaldo up front. Now, I wouldn't have a huge problem with that. I wouldn't have done it personally, because when you play like that again and you're a man down, you really give up the sides of the pitch. You sacrifice all your width. You say, well, you got your wing backs, but a man down, you don't really have your wing backs. They get penned back and they get narrowed up, and now you have a midfield three operating within 25 yards of each other in that central area of the pitch, and they've really got to shift very quickly across the pitch, and it's almost impossible to do. So that's how you kind of give up the sides to the opposition team. That's what I'm talking about. I'm always a little bit reluctant to do that, to be honest with you. People say get the extra defender on, get that back three in, and certainly it helps you in that central defensive area, but I don't think there was any need for that. Personally, for me, I'd rather keep two blocks of four on the pitch and that lone striker. So you keep that bit of width in those wide midfield areas, so you don't get exposed down the sides 2v1, and also you can break out from that. So if you have the likes of, if you still have Sancho on the pitch, you've brought on Greenwood or Jesse Lingard in those wide areas, those wide midfield areas, they can drop in and double up with the Manchester United fullbacks, but they can also break out and use that pace to get up in contact with Ronaldo if you're going to insist on keeping him on the pitch. So yeah, it wasn't so much he went to a back three, although I wouldn't have done it, but I looked at that midfield three. Now, you're talking about Bruno and Pogba having the legs, but Pogba for me certainly doesn't have the legs. Pogba isn't the player that he was when we first broke into the Juventus team, playing left of a kind of diamond in midfield where he actually had the legs to get in and out and up and down the pitch. He's not, I don't think he can put that responsibility on him now. That's why I don't like to see him playing in wide areas, because you're carrying Pogba in the team in a wide area when you haven't got the ball. Now, this was different. He went left of a three, but there's still big defensive responsibility there to shift out into the fullback areas, etc. So no, I was a bit worried when I saw Pogba and Bruno alongside Fred, who again, he's the one who you're really leaning on. You know, he's your defensive kind of linchpin at that moment, Fred. But I don't know how long Fred's been at the football club, but I still look at Fred now. I think he's not a natural defender. There's times in those games when he's played well, of course he has, but
okay, so he's not going to fix that. But in terms of Solskjaer, where what's your view at the moment on where Solskjaer is in his evolution as a manager? Is he getting better? Is there evidence that he's getting better?
You'd like to think so. You'd like to think so. The position that he's in, the experiences that he's had when he's been at the football club, he has to be getting better. But if he's not, that points to the fact that you're looking at somebody who really hasn't got a great understanding of the game and not really a lot of football and intelligence. If you're not getting better operating at that level, the people he has around, the players
can
that he's working
it. You say you'd like,
I think the team's getting better. That's a difficult one to, I think the team's certainly getting better in terms of recruitment, and I do like the players he's brought to the football club, but I don't know, it's difficult to say. There was a choice to be made in the summer in terms of where are we going to recruit, where do we best need reinforcement.
Yeah.
So they haven't gone and spent in that area of the pitch that we're talking about, that central midfield area. Is that, has Solskjaer gone to the club owners and said, look, I'm happy with what I've got in there, I'd rather we go and spend at centre half and higher up the pitch? If that's the case, then I would be concerned.
Yeah.
Because for me,
that's, it feels that way.
Yeah, exactly. So if he doesn't see that, that would be an early concern. Just in terms of the substitutions tactically at times during this time there, I think there's been game high profile games when it hasn't really worked, I suppose you could say that, of every manager. But to be fair, the bigger managers, when the big games come around, they kind of revel in it, and they generally get those decisions right in terms of how they set up their team, and also those big moments in the game when substitutes, not necessarily sending offs, but when substitutions need to be made to impact the game. I think we've seen that with Tuchel in a very kind of a small period, even when he's been at Chelsea. And I think the very top managers have that real tactical noose in terms of what's required there at any given moment during the game. And I'm not, yeah, and I think that's a fair point. I can't honestly say Solskjaer's kind of bowled me over in that respect. But I like the way the team's evolving. I think there's a team there that he can put on the pitch this season that can really challenge. Give him time.
This season, it's his team, it's his vision, and if it hasn't been successful at the end of the season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'd have no problem with that. Yeah, serious questions will be asked. Yeah.